everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dead and Married. I'm Travis.
And I'm Ashley.
And this week...
Okay, let's just apologize up front because...
We've sucked at life.
We have really sucked at life this month. And I know that some of you are going, well, of course, we know what month it is. It was to be expected. So thank you for giving us that grace because, yeah, we've had a little bit of a busy month, a kind of trying month. So recording was not necessarily top priority as much as kind of taking care of our family this month. So with that being said, we are still continuing in our London's favorite movies lineup here, and I don't know how to preface this. I loved my child very, very much. Did she have the greatest taste in movies? Sometimes no. But at any rate, we are going to be talking about 2002's Paul W.S. Anderson directed film Resident Evil. So let's give it a tiny bit of backstory here. So my first contact with him as a director was 95's Mortal Kombat, and that was such a huge staple of my youth. And up until that point, we hadn't had very many good video game adaptations, and that one stood out as being one of the best that we had had up to that point. And so with that film being a success, I guess it naturally came that people were going to be like, well, if he can make a good video game film, let's have him take on another hot property. And we've realized, despite the cult following the series has gained over the years, we did realize that maybe that was for naught.
Well, I think with Mortal Kombat, it was... it's a pretty straightforward story, and he incorporated, I think, probably enough elements into that first film, sort of.
It still took some liberties.
100% true to the video game, but it did sort of follow along. But he went on record with this one saying that he thought that's where people messed up, was trying to follow him too close. So he was like, fuck it, I'm doing it live.
Right.
And it has nearly nothing to do with the video games other than the T-Virus, and it's called Resident Evil.
Right.
Yeah, because I don't know. I'm not a Resident Evil game fan. I'm not. Those games are not my bag.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say it was like that one in Silent Hill, right? That you kind of Dead Space.
Yeah, Dead Space is fucking scary though.
Say they give you the creeps.
Yeah,
because I remember you telling me a story once about your brother playing Resident Evil in the dark in the den.
No, it was Silent Hill. We tried doing Silent Hill in the dark, and I was like, nah, I don't think so.
But I remember you saying once that in order to play Dead Space, you would have to take the couch out into the front yard.
I'm going to take it outside on a sunny day.
Yeah.
Which, basically, it's Resident Evil in space.
Yeah.
But at any rate, what I know about the early games is that they were more of a slow burn. You didn't have I don't think there were a ton of fast moving zombies. You were kind of looking for clues, and you never had as many bullets as you wanted if you had a gun at all. But it was it was one person looking for something, and you would get attacked by these zombies, and I think they were probably really hard to kill. That's just what I know about it.
Yeah.
But it was very much sort of a slower burn type of video game.
Yeah.
It was not a third person shooter, which is exactly what this is.
Yeah. I also did not have any experience with this game series. I think the one time I tried to play, I ended up getting so frustrated in the first 5 minutes because I couldn't, and maybe it was just after, I feel like the controls on controllers got so fucking complicated at a point that I remember when the original Xbox 360 came out, I had the most difficulty trying to learn controls. So
if it's got more than a D-pad and two buttons,
you know what?
Out.
Yes, correct. It was the same thing. We had an Evil Dead game. What was it?
I don't remember.
King or Fistful of Boomstick?
Evil Dead. Yeah.
And it was the same thing. I wanted to play it so fucking bad, but I couldn't get a handle on the controls well enough to learn it. But the only Resident Evil game I tried to play, I couldn't figure out how to pick up objects. I didn't have any weapons. And you've got zombies coming at you like in the first 30 seconds and you're like, what the fuck? So I'm just dead.
Yeah.
And it was so frustrating that it was never a game I wanted to pick up again.
Yeah. I don't remember which one it was, but I know that London had been like, Dad, you got to get this video game.
Yes. I think as a matter of fact, it was that one.
And I don't know if it was two or three or whatever, but every time it was like a weird over the shoulder perspective. The camera was in a weird place.
Yeah.
And then the camera would move. It didn't move with you. Like you're running around out there and then the camera would flip to a different spot. But now you're looking at yourself through a tree.
Yeah.
And you can't see what the fuck is going on. And I'm like, what the hell is wrong with this game? So I got Aiden and he was like, no, that's probably one of the worst Resident Evil games they ever made. He's like, that's why right there.
Yeah.
Because the cameras are dumb in that one. So you picked the worst one to play.
So,
and I was like, well, I'm fucking done with this game.
So we've touched on our first impressions of the game series. Let's talk about our first impressions of the film. So you and I were pretty fresh into our relationship.
I would have been 22
when
this came out.
And we went to the movies when this came out. Because I think we must have seen a trailer for it in whatever other horror film had been out at the time, Jason X or something. And we were like, oh my God, badass. Even though, again, neither one of us really had any experience with the game. We were going into it as, I don't know, with a fresh perspective, clean slate kind of mentality. And we just knew that it looked pretty action heavy and of course zombies. So I feel like we were all in.
Well, I think that what it was is it had Mila Jovovich in
that
it.
Too.
And she had just been in The Fifth Element a couple of years earlier.
Yeah.
And we were like, yeah, that was a good movie.
Yeah.
Let's go watch this one too.
Right. So when we saw it, we loved it. And I think we bought it pretty soon as it was available to get on DVD.
I'm sure we bought it.
And I think we wore it out. And there were a lot of elements in that time period. This film's almost like a time capsule to me. And we'll talk about score later, obviously. But everything about the film feels very of its time that I look back on it with nostalgia, but pretty much just this first film, and the rest of them are kind of maybe with the exception of part two.
I liked it. I liked the movie when it first came out, and I want to say that I still like it, except trying to prep for this, I watched it
three times.
No, it was more than that.
Because okay.
I watched it a couple times while you were asleep. I shit you not. I tried to watch this movie and actually pay attention to it like five times.
Wow.
And I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I couldn't make it. I liked it when it came out, but I didn't really know anything about the video game. So it was called Resident Evil, and I just took it at its title and went, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. It's Resident Evil. But it had a lot of action in it, and there were some zombies and whatever. I don't know. I mean, I feel like with the horror and whatever we were getting in the early 2000s, it was fine.
Yeah.
By today's standards, it's way too tame. We listened to one review and they were like, you know, if you eliminate the nudity at the front and the back, like a couple quick edits and this movie's PG-13. And yeah. I was like, God damn, he's right.
Very true.
It is almost exactly a PG-13 film.
Yeah.
But in 2002, that was pretty much what we were getting was some PG-13 horror, I think, anyway.
We were. And then I would say very soon after was when we started getting into torture porn territory.
Yeah.
So people were, I would love to say that people were getting tired of PG-13 horror, but that's not true because we still had so much PG-13 horror to get through.
Right.
I'm glad that these days we're taking them back to hard R films.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know why they went that direction. I blame Scream. It's Scream's fault.
And that was rated R, by the way. But when you think about the seeds of its origin, that the game series itself was inspired by the Romero films, and that they had originally got Romero to write some treatments, and I think he wrote something like four or five different ones, supposedly very true to the game.
Well, apparently he had had his assistant play all the games that had been released up to that point and record the gameplay.
Right.
So that he could watch it and find out what it was all about.
Yeah, but it seemed like he really tried. And when you're thinking of taking something like this property and putting George Romero's stamp for just brutal, over-the-top, fucking gory, but with something to say stamp on it, I don't understand why that wouldn't have worked. I mean, I understand that they say, well, it would have ended up being an NC-17. Yeah, I believe that Day of the Dead had an X rating originally, and it's still regarded as probably the best in that original series.
Yeah, but he probably would have stayed closer to the source material, and he would have had something to say about evil corporations.
Right, exactly.
Which is kind of what I think the game is based around, that the Umbrella Corporation is this huge conglomerate that can do whatever the fuck it wants to do.
Mm-hmm. And
that's everything he hates.
Right, exactly. And that's something that's still relevant today, even. So it's really too bad that he wasn't allowed to see it through with his vision. I want to know what that movie would have been like. I mean, it would have been, it would have been gross as hell, but it would have been amazing, I think.
If they gave him a budget.
Right.
They would have had
to. I don't know necessarily, because I think he did those first three movies with pretty minuscule budget, and he was able to do so much with, like, hey, we got some pig guts and a few condoms. What can we do?
That was Tom Savini.
Yes, but it was his movie, so yeah. I don't think he had the budget still, but was able to get a lot accomplished. And I would have liked to have seen what that would have looked like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it wouldn't have been worse.
Fair.
Speaking of which, right, so this film, should I call it a film? Do I call it a film, or do I just say this is a movie? Like, it's not, doesn't deserve it. Anyway, it's a 6.6 out of 10 on IMDb, and 67% on Rotten Tomatoes, but only 35% on Metacritic.
And if you think we're only 35% on Metacritic, consider pledging to us by going to patreon.com/deadandmarried to continue getting content like this.
Well, you just worked that right in there.
I did.
All right, so you already brought it up. It was directed by Paul Wildstyle Anderson, written by the same, and it stars Mila Jovovich as Alice, Michelle Rodriguez as Rain. Okay, I'm going to go through these characters, and this is just lazy writing. Sorry, Wildstyle. Ryan McCluskey, he's the guy that gets the coffee spilled on him.
Uh-huh.
His name is Mr. Gray.
Okay.
Oscar Pierce, and there's no picture, so I have no idea who that is Mr. Red. Indra Ove, who is the woman who says, some people. Elevator lady is Miss Black. Anna Bolt, who is the one that's like, it's not, we're not on fire in here.
Are you going from order of appearance or how it is on IMDb?
I'm just going in that order. Is Dr. Green. Joseph May, who is some random ass person, I have no idea who that was Dr. Blue.
We get the point.
This guy is Dr. Brown. They were all just Dr. or Mr. Color.
Why do I have to be Mr. Pink?
Exactly. It's like, you know what they did in Reservoir Dogs? Let's do that, but with the whole cast. I'm going to butcher this name. Heike Makatsch is Lisa. She's the sister.
Oh, okay.
Eric maybe is his sister.
Uh-huh.
James Butler plays Clarence, but I have no idea where Clarence was in this. What?
No, that's what I'm saying. Let's do the main cast.
Okay, so we'll skip Mr. White and Miss Gold. Eric Mabius plays Matt. He is, I guess, supposed to be a stand-in for a Raccoon City police officer, like Leon Skinnedy or whoever some of the other ones were.
Right.
Colin Salmon plays One. He's the leader of the military team that's going down there. Martin Cruz plays Kaplan. Pasquale Aliardi plays JD. And Liz May Bryce plays Medic.
Medic.
That's the name they gave her. Medic.
Okay.
I don't know if it's because she was the first one to die.
Well, one of them anyway.
Well, the first commando to die.
It was her and that other guy that like lost his fingers.
Well, that would probably be Torsten Jerebek, who plays Commando Number One. What the fuck? You think they got the scripts and they were like, how important am I in this film? And then they saw their name and they went, I'm a red shirt.
Well,
I'm going to die immediately.
I would argue that there have been some red shirts over a long period of horror, a film that is horror, that have made more impact than you think. So,
yeah. The only two credits that I'm going to give, because I feel like they will be relevant later, are Marco Beltrami and Marilyn Manson. They did the music for this film.
Yes.
And we'll talk about that later. But anyway, that's it for cast and crew. It was deep.
Oh, right. Yeah. As deep as this story is.
As deep as the story is. This puddle's not even deep enough to drown in.
Okay. There's nothing to this story.
Well,
not really.
There's not. So it's I'm going to try to think of how I can do this really fast. So Alice wakes up in the shower, not knowing who she is because she was gassed because the hive was breached and the Red Queen enacted some kind of weird ass protocol where she thought she needed to kill everyone because her partner, played by Sir not appearing in this film because I didn't
James
read his name,
Purefoy.
James Purefoy, stole some of the T-Virus and broke one of them on his way out.
Mm-hmm.
So she locked it down, killed everybody, knocked them out upstairs. She wakes up with convenient amnesia so that they have a reason to tell us exactly what's happening. And the SWAT team decides, let's take her with us. And
we're gonna open whatever up the reason, hive.
Matt is there looking for his sister, Lisa. And yeah. He just happens to have broken into her house when the SWAT team in their pajamas show up. And so they're like, let's take this random motherfucker with us too.
Yeah.
You know what? Everybody get in the car. We're just all going to fucking go. We're all
going
to go.
We're going on an adventure.
So they go downstairs and then half of them die. And then the other half die on the way out. That's the story. There's not a lot of story. It's an action film.
It is. And to be fair, they are trying to figure out what happened. You know, why was this virus released? Basically, what happened to this building? Yeah. That is all they're trying to figure out.
But we get all the hows and what fors in flashbacks as Alice's memory conveniently comes back through accidentally touching people or seeing things or whatever.
Right.
Or James Purefoy pulling a gun on her. And then she's like, oh, I fucked that guy.
Well, to be fair, I think that happened when he gave her his jacket.
Yeah, that's probably right.
But there's no deeper story here. I mean, yes, you could go with the whole corporations are evil. It's basically, you know, big farm, you know, big pharma.
You
sorry,
mean
not
pharma?
Big farm. Farm. Can't talk. I can't word. But I mean, I guess you can take that from it. But the characters that we are with, we know nothing about them. I really feel like, yes, well, because of certain actions, we are supposed to root for certain people. But we're still not given a lot about them. No backstory, no personality traits, no characteristics that really make them stand out. No charisma, no character, no... Just, they're all so milquetoast.
Well, it starts with the release of the virus. And you do get to see him. You don't know it's Purefoy that does it, but you do get to see the release of the virus in the lockdown.
Right.
And then, but basically everyone who has a speaking line during that opening sequence is immediately killed. They're drowned. They are suffocated with halon gas. They get their head chopped off in an elevator.
Right.
Like, so there's no character building. There's not even an introduction. I didn't know all these. I didn't know that Crayola's entire box was in there. I had no idea because they didn't even name each other in these things. It's like the room's not on fire and then it fills up with water like some kind of human aquarium.
Yeah.
And they're all dead. And then the SWAT team is kind of the same way. The Special Forces team, really no introductions when they come in. They just load them up, take them downstairs. You get a little screen time with Michelle Rodriguez, with Rain.
Uh-huh.
Because she's the one that has to fix the train. But she's playing basically Dominic Toretto's girlfriend all over again.
Uh-huh.
Because she's just this badass chick. And that's fine. She does it well. That's not a complaint.
I think, she was in our house. She was London's girlfriend. London loved Michelle Rodriguez and would watch everything she was in. And so I can't hate on her too much. But at the same time, yeah, I don't feel like she brought anything different to the table as far. I mean, maybe you could argue that she did in this one bring the slightest bit of vulnerability only because she was infected. Other than that, she's basically, I'm just going to be tough bitch for 90 minutes like always.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that's nothing against her. You do you.
There are plenty of other actors and actresses out there that they have this character that they play and they do it well. And so that's just what they're cast for.
Like The Rock.
He is a sensitive man.
Honey, he wears the same outfit in 4 different movies.
It is not the same outfit. Shirts just don't fit him well.
And I'm going to be even more mean to you. I would argue that Ryan Reynolds does the same thing.
You watch your mouth.
I feel like he was a character actor to start out. He was a working actor. And after Deadpool, every character he plays is Deadpool now.
No.
Yes.
You are wrong.
I'm not wrong.
You are wrong.
I'm not.
Moving on.
I'm like, bring me back Amityville Ryan Reynolds, because at least there he had some fucking character. Now everything is, ugh. Okay, I'll stop talking.
You just need to stop.
At any
rate. You're
going
to have to go sleep in your Jeep.
If you're right. If you have a well, I guess you'd call it typecasting or pigeonholing. I guess if it makes you money and you're good at it, then ride that train all the way home.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's the character that she's played. That's the type of character that she's known for. And I'm not mad about it, but they didn't try to give us anything different in this film.
Right.
So they introduce her and you're like, okay, I know who this is. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's it. But like JD, I guess, who is supposed to be her friend, other than a little bit of banter, you know, nothing about him.
Right.
Medic is the first one to die. And I think she spoke twice from the time they met him you meet in the mansion.
Yeah.
Until the laser chops the top of her face off.
Right.
That's it. And they all kind of follow suit, including Commando Number One. God damn it. I missed him.
I would say that world building was probably more important to Anderson than character building. This is just not, in terms of writing, this is not the strongest script of his. I would argue that he's done a better job with people getting to know characters, say in something like Event Horizon, which we covered way back in our beginning, where you did get to know some backstories about the characters. You understood when Sam Neill fucking went off the rails why he got to the point that he did. There was more there. Is it perfect? No. But was there more there to work with? Yes.
I'm going to have to disagree with you there.
I know, because you don't like Event Horizon.
No, I don't have a problem with Event Horizon. I feel like it's Hellraiser in space. But I feel like that movie already got done, and he had a lot of existing material to work with, and he is not credited as a writer in his filmography for that.
Yeah.
I would say that this is true to everything else that he had done, or everything that came after. He did Alien versus Predator. He did all the Resident Evil films. He did Death Race with Jason Statham. Death Race 2. He did Monster Hunter. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just the kind of movie he writes. It's got Michael Bay is going to blow shit up. Paul Anderson is going to cast Mila Jovovich, who is, they married, I guess, after this film. And she's going to basically be the main character. And that's fine.
Well, but we've bitched about Rob Zombie. You have bitched about Rob Zombie doing the same thing with Sherry Moon Zombie.
The thing that I've bitched about, though, is that he's like, I'm going to cast my wife and she's kind of hot, so I'm going to have her take her clothes off. But clearly in Salem's Lot, she can do more than that.
Salem's Lot?
What did I say? What?
You said Salem's Lot. You mean you the Lords what? Of
they
Salem.
They could remake it and put her in that too. Lords of Salem. She did more than, I mean, she did take her clothes off, but she can do more than just be whatever her name was in that trilogy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And unfairly, I think if Mila Jovovich, because she has, I mean, I can't name a lot of them, but she has been in roles outside of his filmography where she shined. She did well. You know, I would bring up something like The Fifth Element, which I know could be argued that it is the same type of film where it's kind of a sci-fi action movie, but she was endearing and lovable in that part, and I feel was given more to do as opposed to something like
this. So she has a huge filmography.
Yeah.
She's been in a ton of films. It's not necessarily all stuff that I've seen, and it looks like there's quite a bit of it that were foreign films.
Mm-hmm.
So, she's done a lot of work and she's capable of doing more than this. I wonder, you know, you said at one point that Sherry Moon said that she does those films because Rob wants her to.
Yes.
I wonder if this is kind of the same thing.
Maybe.
You know, because clearly she is a serious actress because she has, like, she was in Three Musketeers. I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was really hugely popular when it came out. But she can act. Like you said, she can do other things than this, but this is all he writes for her.
Right.
So I wonder if she does it because he wants her to do it.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more when we go into acting.
Yeah.
But as far as the story goes, again, yeah, there's just not enough for anyone to do to feel like you can really root for them. For me, except for one character, and we'll talk about that later. But as far as the story goes, I feel like it's very simple, very cut and dry, and there's a lot of things that are predictable. And for, I think it is a huge mistake that they did not try to capitalize more on trying to stay faithful to the game. Despite me not knowing enough about it, I think that is its inherent flaw, because you get people going, oh my God, they're finally making Resident Evil. And then they get there and they're like, who the fuck is Alice? Who the fuck is Matt? I don't know any of these people.
Right. I think if they'd made it more of a, and again, I'm not super familiar with the first game or the second game or however many games had been out when this came out. But I want to say that I think they were more of a slow burn type of game mm-hmm. where, I mean, I'm sure you could run your way through, but I mean, these people had the infinite ammo cheat code fully on halfway through the film. Then they run out of bullets. From what I know about the video games, you have one bullet ever. There's only one bullet in the entire game.
Right.
And you might not find it. But if they did it, and this movie had been more of a, we're not equipped to deal with this, and we're going to have to be sneaky, and it was very tense. Like, if they had just upped the tension instead of just the in-your-face action. And don't get me wrong, I like in-your-face action. They could have made it a legitimately scary film.
Right.
That most of it was pretty brightly lit. Like, they immediately turned the lights on when they went down there. And I'm not sure that the lights, I think you have a flashlight in the video game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's creepy as hell about Silent Hill and Dead Space is that they're so damn dark.
Right.
And I would imagine that Resident Evil probably is too, because I think both of those came after Resident Evil. So mm-hmm. they were probably using that as sort of a prototype. But yeah, I think if they'd stayed closer to the video game, or at least use characters from the game.
I remember I have a friend who is a huge, huge fan of this game series. And I remember asking her, like, well, you know, is it pretty faithful? And she was like, she's like, there's elements, you know, that have been taken out, like the service dogs and the liquors and that type of thing. Everything I know about the games, I have learned because we have children who are gamers, right? We say Leon Skinnity for a reason, mostly because of Jacksepticeye, but because London, that was her favorite character. She was obsessed with that character. And whatever Big Boobs McGee that came out later. Big Boobs,
she was in the Lady Damascus second one?
No.
Oh, the vampire lady.
Yeah.
Like that was, I think that she was in The Village.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I think that's the most one of the more recent out. Games. Yeah. And yeah, everything I know is because of that. Everything that I have learned about games since I stopped playing games has been because of you or the kids.
Yeah. But I feel like they could have incorporated some of those characters into this film, and it shouldn't have taken place in the Hive. It should have taken place in the town
mm-hmm.
or maybe in the mansion mm-hmm. or something like that. But there's no reason they couldn't have brought in Leon or some of the other characters. I'm trying to think because they incorporated a couple of them into the second film.
Well, yeah,
the lady Jill
Valentine and Nemesis.
Then Ada Wong came up later.
Way later. I think that was like part 5.
Seventh or eighth film. However many of these there
part
are.
Part 15, yeah.
And I don't know that she was in the first one. But I mean, they could have incorporated a couple of those known characters into this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And changed the setting. And it would have, I don't know.
Well, that's my other problem with the story is that, and I'm going to bring the sequels into this a little bit, is that there are so many plot holes throughout that none of them, it all gets so fucking convoluted, right? Because the game is this one story, but then in this Alice storyline, it goes from point A to point Z, back to point S, back to point N, you know, where it's so fucking all over the place that you almost forget what this original story was in the first place.
I want to say in the first Resident Evil, the character that you're playing is looking for someone. And that's the whole premise. That's the reason they're there. I think. I could be wrong. I'm sure someone's out there rolling their eyeballs. But I want to say that it's pretty straightforward. And so you have the Umbrella Corporation that exists, and they may be the reason that this person disappeared or whatever, but that's not the driving factor for the protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's sort of a side story that gets explored later.
Right.
But it's not necessarily the primary motivation. And so that makes it even a little bit scarier because it's just one person.
Yeah.
You know, when you're playing the game, I think in the first one, it's just you.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're alone,
mm-hmm.
Which would have made this a whole lot scarier.
I would still say that it has a very claustrophobic feeling to it, being trapped in that building and all that. But what I was going to say originally was you get to the end of the film and that's what it looks like. Like, she's the sole survivor out of this entire thing, and the town is completely fucking desolate. And then you go to part 2 where Raccoon City PD is still up and running and swarming and fully functional, and there's people all over town. So it doesn't, if I think about this film series too long, it makes my head explode. You know?
Yeah, I don't know.
And I think that's just the point that I was trying to make is I think that this first film was very telling of that. It wasn't somebody that was going in and taking the source material that seriously.
Yeah.
That was all I was trying to say. But yeah, it's a simple story. It's fine. I can't find a lot of fault with it outside. The dialogue is pretty awful in places. Like, I remember telling Travis, because there's the scene where Rain gets bitten the first time in her hand, and she says, "She took a chunk clean right out of me." Yeah. And I'm like, who the fuck wrote that line?
Who wrote that?
Because that sounds like something we would say as ordinary people, right?
No, even I wouldn't say that.
But it doesn't sound like typical movie dialogue.
No.
It sounds like somebody just... some young kid wrote it and...
Well, I mean, kind of.
Yeah.
So I just found like a two-sentence synopsis for the first game. And it is, you control Chris Redfield and Jill Valentine, the members of the Elite Task Force Stars that must escape a mansion infested with zombies and other monsters. So that's sort of like the super short one for the first game. And that I'd buy that for a dollar. We just watched RoboCop.
We sure did. I'm watching the movies that we've already covered instead of the ones that we're supposed to cover.
Yeah. I've watched this thing six times trying to sit through the whole film, and she's been doing that. So anyway, that's enough about the story.
Yeah.
Special effects. They weren't that special. I take that back. I feel like the zombie makeup was pretty good.
I was going to say, there are things that are good and there are things that are egregiously bad.
I don't have an issue with the practical effects in this film.
Uh-huh.
The visual effects are... dated. Would it have been digital in 2002?
Yes. There's a lot of green screen and green makeup.
There is, but I'm going to go back to my normal crutch. When I watched this, I thought it was badass. But we would have watched this on something that was probably less than 480p.
Oh my God, I haven't heard you have this argument in a long time.
It is. I know. Well, we haven't watched a ton of shit visual effects.
Right.
They don't look as bad when the resolution is shit.
Right. When you're watching it on VHS.
Yeah, on a VHS, you're like, oh shit, that's real.
Standard DVD.
it doesn't look that bad. But when I think any of these older films where they sort of at the beginning of the visual effects craze or whatever. When you're watching them on an ultra HD TV, you're like, that looks fucking awful.
Yeah, yeah. I will put you to task to see who did the makeup effects while I talk. But there were certain scenes that the practical effects looked really, really great. But the liquors are such a disappointment, especially when you think of what that's supposed to be. And then the quote unquote super liquor is, these are all things that if you... I know.
That sounds like something you'd find in an Adam and Eve. super liquor.
I know. We're trying to talk about this film in terms of whether it's real or not. You have to really, really... Travis distracted me. You have to really, really... What's the phrase? I can't think of what I'm trying to say.
Suspend belief?
Yes, exactly. To watch something like this to begin with. But the very idea that you would be in a position with a creature like this that would exist in real terms, that'd be absolutely fucking terrifying.
Yeah. So I just passed you the list of makeup effects people. There's like 24 of them, and I don't recognize any of those folks. But I'll see your suspend belief, disbelief, whatever.
I don't recognize any of these people either.
And raise you Jurassic Park, because Jurassic Park had already been done when this movie came out.
Right.
And it did a hell of a lot better than they did.
And...
but it probably had about 50 times the budget because Spielberg.
I was going to say, Paul Wildstyle Anderson is not Steven Spielberg either.
No.
And did not have Industrial Light and Magic to work with.
It's also true. Also true.
But where it does get practical, like you were talking about, like the zombie effects are pretty good, albeit they did use a lot of, like I said, compositing and digital stuff. But
what I'm talking about
looks.
Is the ones that they didn't, like Michelle Rodriguez at the end, James Purfoy's zombie at the end. Other than the glowy blue eyeballs, I don't understand why they did that in the last two zombies. The very first zombie that you meet, the one that stands up when they're in there with all those tanks, and the guy's like, "Stop or I'll shoot." And he tells her 15 times before he shoots her like one time in the leg.
Mm-hmm.
Makeup wasn't bad on her. And that wasn't an effect or green screen or anything like that. So
When they would do these close-up shots on the liquors, too, that would, you know, were very gory looking, but if they were super, super close shots. And I thought, okay, that looks like something real. That looks like something they filmed and they did a super close shot of it as to, you know, give us a little bit of gore. The other that I would say are the server's dogs. I felt so terrible because obviously a lot of that was done practically. And there's the one scene where the lone Doberman walks in and and maybe it's just me. It looks like the poor doggy is standing there shivering.
Well, I mean, clearly with those dogs, they just probably dipped rags in some red.
Yeah.
Whatever. Red.
And hung some prosthetic and just, off like, of them.
Just draped some wet shit on them. And yeah. They probably was cold.
I feel so bad because
they're short-haired dogs.
Yeah. Because watching the movie the first time, I'm like, oh, shit. Because while I love doggies, I am also terrified of certain breeds of dogs. And Dobermans are one of them. But now, having kind of gotten over that over the years, now when that dog walks in and its legs are kind of shaking, I'm like, poor baby. I just want to go like, oh, go scoop it up and, you know, give it all the loves and all that. But nonetheless, it still looked pretty good. Those dogs did look pretty vicious.
Yeah, except for the chrome teeth they put on some of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I feel like so much work was put into the look of the hive and this futuristic thing that they were trying to go with. And for the most part, it works. But there's a lot of it that kind of same way. It just looks very, we have a budget for setting up this scene or this world, and I feel like they tried to put all their eggs in that basket, and some of it's like, that doesn't look that great. I would have preferred more character building than these special effects.
Yeah, they spent a lot of time trying to make it look good. Yeah. Not necessarily the visual effects or whatever, but the set pieces. I feel like, yeah, they spent a lot of time and effort on the set pieces. And don't get me wrong, it did look fine. It looked good.
It definitely invokes a mood.
To go back to our original conversation about story, if it had been one person running from zombies through some busted-ass dark mansion, I'd have been good with that, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, don't get me wrong, it looks good. The blues of it all make the red really pop in a great way. And the fact this was something they did again in which part is it? I can't remember which part it is. That basically they're hopping from location to location to location like a video game where like they're in Russia or they're in Japan or they're, you know, that was a cool idea in itself too, that there was kind of this multi-level thing. And I feel like the Hive was kind of like that.
Yeah. And when they showed them the little map of the Hive with the red line, Indiana Jones style with them going up and down, that was your loading screen. No, in video games, they have loading screens when you transition. That was it.
Sorry, I just thought you were going somewhere more with that since you interrupted me.
Yeah.
But I thought that part was cool of yes, while it still has a claustrophobic feeling of being trapped in one location, because I think we only see daylight in the movie once apart from flashbacks.
At the very end.
Well, I was seeing it at the very beginning. Yeah, I forgot about the end. I was seeing it at the very beginning where she looks out her window.
It was dark at the beginning.
But yeah, that's pretty much all you get. But it's still kind of cool in that you get these multi layers of the building, different areas of the building. So we get to get these kind of cool different set pieces. You know, that was all.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, I'm with you. It looks good.
Like going from the lab or where the dogs are kept.
I could have done with simpler sets and a better story.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
The acting. The acting. I'm not going to smash anybody on the acting. I can't. They didn't give anybody in this film enough to fucking do for me to get mad about it.
I guess that's my argument.
I mean, I could bitch about line delivery, but let's be honest. If you cast me in something and you give me one line, how much effort am I going to put into that one line?
I don't know. I guess it would depend on how much I was getting paid.
That would depend on who asked me to do it. Depends on who asked me to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't bitch about the acting. It was all about action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actions speak louder than words.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. Maybe apart from James Purefoy, who was in shows like Rome, I think the first thing I ever saw him in was A Knight's Tale. I think he's had a pretty solid career with more dramatic roles in his arsenal. But for the most part, again, these actors and actresses are kind of known for doing one type of thing. I would say that anytime you put Colin Salmon in a film, he almost immediately always stands out. But I think he's one of those working actors that, even though I know his name, most of the time, he's one of those people you don't know their name, but when he comes up, you go, oh, that guy. That guy's pretty cool.
But he always plays the cool guy.
Yeah.
He's sort of a cool background character. He's usually like a goon or an enforcer or something. You know what I mean?
Well, in Arrow, he was just stepdad who...
Well, that's what I mean. He's never the main guy. Yeah. He's always like main guy adjacent.
Right.
And usually he usually plays a tough guy of some kind.
But I would argue that, yeah, he always has a presence about him that I'm always happy to see him whenever he pops up.
There's something Tony Todd about him. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the voice a little bit. Maybe. I don't know.
And, well, he's got that really cool British accent too. He does. So it just makes him inherently cooler. I know a lot of people bitch about Eric Mabius being kind of wooden in this part. I think Travis is right. I think he just wasn't given a lot to do. Yes, he had a little bit of an emotional thing because his sister was in the building and she was dead, but there really wasn't a lot for him to do otherwise. And I happen to like him as an actor. We're going to keep the Crow Salvation out of the conversation, but he's another one. Whenever he pops up in something, I'm like, nice. I like him. I think he's a terrific actor. Could be that I'm just a fan of The L Word and he had such a major role in that show for a while. But I feel like with everybody else, like Travis said, they were more fixated on the physicality of their roles rather than could they deliver a really convincing performance. Because regardless of how you feel about Mila Jovovich's acting, the woman is a straight badass. That is never something I am going to fault her in this series for.
Her wire fighting team is always ready.
She always performs physically to the best of her ability and then some. I feel like she gives it everything every time. Like she really commits to being an action hero. And let's face it, we don't have a lot of female action heroes. I think she's pretty fucking good and she looks amazing doing it. So there's that too. But I would have liked to have seen more that she could have had to sink her teeth into, so to speak. But there was one character who is not even really a main character that I actually did root for in this film, and that was the character of Kaplan. Because for some whatever fucking reason, he was the only character to really have an arc in the film. I don't know why, but they start with him just kind of being this bumbling, nervous idiot and kind of turning into this reluctant hero throughout, where he doesn't really want to do this, but he's being forced into the situation and he kind of becomes a badass too. So at the end of the movie, when you think he's been dead for this period of time and he comes back in kind of, deus ex machina everything, still, it's a moment where you're like, fucking cool, because for a second you felt bad because he was sacrificing himself for the team so that they could live and he has one fucking bullet with this sea of the undead and he's like, you're gonna have to work for your meal, which again is a shitty line, but you're like, yeah, I can kind of get behind this guy. And so he's really the only one to me that kind of had a complete narrative. Everybody else is such a mystery, and for somebody like Alice, I can understand that, especially knowing that we were probably going to have more of her story unfold throughout the franchise. I can understand some mystery being there with her, but everyone else, it's like, JD gets attacked by these zombies in the elevator. Yeah, it makes Rain feel bad because they're buddies, but that's all any emotional investment I get out of that.
Well, and that they're buddies is all we know.
Yeah, they just have banter. That's it. And they really don't even have but a couple lines of banter even. So, but other than that, the performances are fine.
Yeah, they're fine. They're
not awful. Nobody is a terrific actor or actress in this film, but look what type of film it is. It's a B-level horror film with a bigger budget.
I would say it's an action film with horror elements.
Or that.
I wouldn't even call it a legit horror film.
That's also fair. They really, really invested more into the action aspect of this film than they did the horror of it.
Yeah, because you change the zombies into just enemy soldiers of some kind, and this is just like one of those summer blockbuster type action films.
Right, yeah, I agree.
So
it's a popcorn muncher.
I really don't have anything else to say about the acting. The only thing I would say about Kaplan is that the only reason you get anything from him, from his character, is because he was the only tech person. He was their computer guy. Right. They had to keep him around, and you can't just have him standing in the background of every scene.
Yeah.
So I feel like they gave him those lines and stuff out of necessity, not necessarily because they wanted to. They were like, shit, it's a 90-minute film, and we got to keep this guy around for 80 of it. So.
Well, at any rate, he was still the character I probably rooted for the most, yeah, because he had, yeah, more to do.
I agree.
So.
Quote, kill and scene.
No, score.
Score.
You missed score entirely.
Score. I like the score.
I was talking earlier about this being a time capsule of a film, and that's because the music involved in it is very of its time, too. If you know me well enough, you know that I am a huge, huge fan of industrial metal. I'm huge Nine Inch Nails, Marilyn Manson. I like the music of that era. And at the time, it was becoming the cool thing to do, to have whatever rock star was kind of popular at the time help you out with your film scores. Jonathan Davis did it with Queen of the Damned. Charlie Clouser, being huge in the Saw franchise, he practically is the Saw franchise score. But yeah, they
were Smashing Pumpkins guy.
Yeah, Billy Corgan did Stigmata. Trent Reznor did Lost Highway. Yeah, it was kind of the popular thing to do around that era. And for me, and I know that this may not necessarily be true to everyone, but I feel like metal, or at least rock, kind of go hand in hand with the horror genre. At least it does for me. There's something, I don't know, maybe it's because of the rebellion of those two separate mediums, but they decided to go with the industrial score to this. And I have heard people say that they didn't necessarily think it fit this movie, but I would argue that probably more people remember this film because of the score.
So I just watched the film, and so if you asked me to say anything that I remembered specific about it, I could probably come up with something. I mean, I've been faking it for 51 minutes now. But at any point in the future, if you ask me what I remember about it, it's going to be the song, the theme song, or whatever, mm-hmm, you want to call it. Mm-hmm. It's not the score. It's at the very beginning and it's at the very end,
right,
with the chimes or whatever the bells or whatever they're, mm-hmm, that they're playing. And then the like industrial drums come in the background.
And guitar, yeah.
That's badass.
It really is.
And they didn't, I don't think they continued that with the rest of the series, and they really should have. Because to me, that music is synonymous with the Resident Evil franchise.
So you have always said that you feel like you can remember a score better if they have a central theme like that. And yeah, so I agree. I think it is a missed opportunity that they didn't take that theme and take it across the series, because it's really good. And if this movie is nothing else, one of the things it has working for it, that it is a tense film. There are several scenes where you're like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, like you feel kind of a sense of what the characters are feeling, the urgency of everything happening. There's so many scenes like that, and the score backs that up pretty nicely at times, like the laser scene in particular, when those guitars come roaring in, and Colin Simon, I can't remember his character's name, when he's kind of having this badass moment where you're thinking maybe he's gonna get past this thing or whatever. But the music builds up in such intensity that it just works. I think that the score is great. And it's also, you were talking about the chimes. It kind of gives that kind of little kid nursery energy to it, too.
I feel like it ties the Red Queen being a child in,
yeah,
really well.
Yeah. So it gives it that level of creepiness, too. So score, I'm very happy with. And then, you know, you end a movie, Slipknot is a roll credits. That's not a bad choice to make. Or part two when it's, Ah!
When it's someone else.
God damn it, it's a band that we love so much.
I have no idea.
Killswitch Engage.
Oh,
yeah. The end of Heartbreak is at the end of part two.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they definitely, I don't know if this is a decision of the person score or if Paul W. S. Anderson is a metal fan, but either way, you put some metal in a horror film, I'm pretty much sold.
And I feel like the way they... The way they did the music, they didn't give anything away with the music.
I thought you said that you thought they did in places.
No. That was in the new RoboCop that we watched today.
Oh, right. Because we were watching it,
and like as soon as the car alarm goes off downstairs, and Joel Kinnaman looks up, they cue the scary music, and you're like, well, this is where he's gonna fucking die.
Yeah, that's right. That's
like
true.
The music gave it up what was about to happen before he even went downstairs, and then it just keeps getting more and more intense as he approaches the car. And earlier in the film, you see the guy stick some shit on the bottom of his car, and you're like, oh, this is it. We're about to see RoboCop.
Right.
Because the music gave it away.
Yeah. Well, not everything can be the OG.
No, I'm just saying that I feel like the music should fit the scene. I know I've said that a lot, but
point
I also like
case.
It. I also like it when...
Or case in point, sorry.
They play with it a little bit so that it doesn't give away necessarily what's about to happen.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't mind a sting when something does happen.
Yeah.
Or if it's a really tense scene and then all of a sudden nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you get the music going in the background and it really gets you ready for something, jump scare, whatever. And then nothing. Because then that adrenaline doesn't have anywhere to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, when it just pays off at the end, you're like, yep, saw that coming.
Yeah. There was one choice, though, that did make me laugh and take me out of it for a second. And that's in the elevator kill. As soon as the elevator gets all the way to the top, decapitating her, it's like one of those boxing bells goes off. It's like, dong! Like, okay, yeah, that was a choice.
It was supposed to be the elevator. The elevator bell. But they've got this super high-tech facility, but they still have a mechanical bell sound when the elevator gets to the floor it's supposed to be on.
I don't know.
Bing! All right. You'd think it'd be something different.
It just sounded so loud and overdramatic, like, and she's knocked out in the final round, you know?
Right.
Anyway, okay, now moving on to quote killing
scene. Wait for
scene.
Big John to tell him, get it on. Okay, now we're doing quote killing scene. I got to make some shit up.
Do you want me to go first?
No, I got this. Okay. All right, so quote was tough for me because there's only one really good one in this film, and you took it.
I already took it.
And you got it. So I'm going to go with the other one that just kind of made me giggle a little bit, and it's when Rain is, she's dying, and Mabius and Purefoy are carrying her off, and she's like, well, get out of here. I got to get laid.
Yeah.
And Mabius says, you might want to clean up a little bit first because she looks fucking rough.
Yeah.
Like, she is tore up. But I did appreciate that moment of levity in that scene, sort of.
There's another one where they're trying to put this code in this door to open it up. And poor Kaplan, he's scrambling. He can't get it. And you have Spence standing there next to him. And he's just like, hurry up. Come on, man. He's so fucking calm about it.
You gonna put that code in?
Yeah. Come on, man. That's pretty funny, too.
Kill. I think I'm going to go with the elevator kill because you took the good kill. It was tense, although I've never seen an elevator go up that fast. Like, I don't know how they made an elevator go up like that, but they don't normally.
It seems like it's in those films where you cut the ropes.
Yeah, but they go down.
That's fair.
When the cables
not
break,
up. Yeah.
They go down.
You go down.
This one, the Red Queen managed to shoot that thing straight up. I don't know. Because when it fell, when the brakes gave out and it fell, you're expecting it to go down and that to be it, right?
Uh-huh.
That's where she's going to get decapitated with the elevator going down.
Uh-huh.
So then, it goes up instead at a super fast rate. You can try to cut off. It was unexpected. And then scene, I'm going to go with the hallway scene because that's...
The hallway?
Yeah, the laser hallway.
Oh, okay.
As my favorite scene.
Okay.
Since you took everything else that is good in this film, but the reason I picked that as my favorite scene is I'd never seen anything like that in a movie before.
Uh-huh.
With lasers just chopping people up. And it was really interesting. Although I don't understand why...
Did they have something like that in Cube,
though? Ones...
Or am I wrong?
I think so, but it's been a really long time since I saw that one.
Yeah, same.
Although I didn't really understand why... I mean, I get it was all CG, but when the grid passes through one, right? And you see that it cut his eyeball?
Yeah.
It ran like an egg yolk.
Yes. I'm pretty sure
it doesn't do that. Like, it was just like someone melted a white crayon or
go
something.
Ahead, talk about my kill.
Anyway. But yeah, it's favorite scene. All right, go. Ready, go.
For quote, I picked the line that everybody thinks of probably, and you're all going to die down here. Just because it is such a tense scene of talking about that, and then it just stops. Everything comes to a screeching halt, and she just turns her head sharply and says that, and it's like, oh, fuck. Like, that pretty much sets you up for the rest of the film. For kill, I am going with one's grid kill for the very same reasons that you just talked about, so I won't elaborate anymore. But yeah, up to that point, you've just never seen anything like that. So you were like, how much of this are they going to show? What am I about to see? And it's implied enough. You don't really see the aftermath of it or as it's really happening. But it's enough is shown to imply what is happening that you go, oh.
He got turned into chunky soup.
Yeah. He is stew meat now.
Indeed.
And scene, I'm probably... Nobody would pick this probably, but I'm actually going to go with the end of the film. Once Alice comes to and she's kind of trying to fight her way out of this facility and she's beating on the window and you see this one lone zombie pass by and she gets herself a little bit more covered up and she goes outside and again, town is completely desolate. You have a newspaper that says the dead walk and she gets a shotgun out of a squad car and cocks the shotgun and just stands there at the ready. I love it. And it has that, again, that theme backing it. It's just, I love it. I love it. Every time I watch it, I'm like, oh, I love this movie. And then I have to remember, no, I really didn't love this movie, but that scene is badass.
Yeah. Anytime you get the post-apocalypse scene,
uh-huh.
like 28 days later when he gets out of the hospital, you're
right.
Like, damn, that's scary. Mm-hmm. Or Rick Grimes, don't dead open inside. Yeah. Whatever. You know, those are always good.
I'm gonna ask you something.
It's always scary.
Sorry. That was more of a Shane though than Rick. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're all going to die down here. That was going to be my pick.
Yeah.
Also, there's something so ominous about that.
Actually, you couldn't remember a single line. And then I brought that up and yeah. You were like, oh.
And I was like, shit, that's the only cool line in the whole movie.
So here's the thing. When it comes to film, I have almost a photographic memory of them. And it doesn't matter how many times, if I've seen it once, if I've seen it 100 times, I can usually remember movies pretty well. Aiden is even scarier. Aiden remembered some just odd little jingle from Twin Peaks last night that he had heard one time and he sung the entire thing. And I was like, what the fuck? How is this your brain?
Because it was like a limerick and those kind of things just stick with him. Yeah. I don't know why. That and sea shanties.
Yeah, but it was so scary. But nonetheless, I hadn't seen this film in years and I still remembered so much of it that I was like, I don't have to watch this to be able to talk about it. And Travis was like, I've got to watch it 5 times and I still can't tell you shit about it. So,
well, it's because I just kept getting distracted.
My shoulders are aching from carrying you in this episode.
I know. I know. All right. Well, let's get on to...
Marry, fuck, or kill.
MFK. I can't kill it. Although, if you were to judge it on its own merits, it doesn't really have very many. But I can't kill it. Because I did really enjoy it when it first came
out.
And London loved it.
Yes.
So it's a fuck. But you don't tell anybody that you did.
Yeah, because this is like that, I'm single right now and I haven't been laid in so long and there's this person that's not really my type.
It's not even a fuck. This is just masturbation. We need to add a category.
Because to be fair, this is a film that I had not watched in years. And I think the same is true for you. Like, it's probably been on for background noise 1,000 times in this house.
Oh, absolutely.
Because of London watching it. Now, she wore the fucking DVD out that we had to buy it digitally eventually. Because the entire series of DVDs that we had, because yes, we did buy them all, mostly for her, were in a stack in her bedroom. And she was not good about putting DVDs back in their case. races, she would just take them out and throw them around her room, whatever. And then she would come back, Mom's DVD's not working.
Well, so... I think she pretended they were throwing stars when she wasn't watching. She like tossed the other ones around the room while she was watching one.
Doing some Alice cosplay in there.
Yeah.
But, no, so, it had to have been on 1,000 times for noise, one of the films in the series at least. But for me to watch it on my own and choose to watch it, I'd give it every 4 or 5 years, maybe. So for that reason, I'm also just going to have to give it buck/masturbation.
Well, see, I'm going with the masturbation part because you don't tell anybody that you did it.
Right. Oh, man, I spent all afternoon slapping the ham.
I hope they don't wake up. Final thoughts. You know what? Maybe that should have been the final thought. Yeah.
Final thoughts. If you haven't seen it, I would argue that you're not really missing a lot. It's not, when I'm introducing somebody to horror, this is the last thing that would come up, probably this and Birdemic, but...
Sharknado.
Sharknado. I'm not giving it enough credit. I'm being a dick, but it's not one that I feel like you're missing out if you've never seen it. It's just kind of one of those that a certain age group among us, you know, it happened, we saw it, we loved it, now we're kind of like, it's a guilty pleasure. It's from my youth.
If you were a young adult or teenager when it came out, you thought it was cool.
Yeah.
That was it.
I mean, if you're a completionist, right? Because I know that they've had a Netflix series come out since and all that. If you kind of just, out of morbid curiosity, want to see the seeds of its origin, then sure, seek it out, whatever. See where it kind of began. But other than that...
Well, if you want to see why they turned the video games from what they originally were as a suspenseful horror game into a first-person shooter...
Right.
This is what started that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because over time, the games began to copy the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're all basically like this. Actually, they get more batshit crazy as they go along.
Yeah.
Because he had to keep as Anderson continued to up the ante with the monsters, he finally had to basically just turn Alice into a superhero.
Yes.
Yeah. So you've got like Captain America fighting zombies, sort of. I mean, yeah, that's pretty accurate, really.
Yeah. Well, I'd say Black Widow, but...
Yeah, but...
Oh, well, no. You mean wasn't... because of the super juice.
Yeah, because of the super juice.
I realize what that just sounded like. Juice.
Enunciate. Did not say what Lord. Some people may have thought I just said. Because of the super soldier serum. You're not helping.
I'm sorry.
I said it, and then I went.
It's amusing that we're juice. Anyway.
Now's a good time to quit.
Now's a good time to quit.
It's a good time to turn it off.
So next week, we will be, in the last couple of films, we will be exploring yet another musical, but I'm going to give us a break between musicals, even though I feel like we've taken a pretty substantial break. Also, because we're so behind in this schedule, you're more likely to get this episode this week again instead of next weekend, because we've only got so many weekends left, maybe one. I don't know. We'll have to see how it plays out.
The end is nigh. That's what she's saying.
Yeah. So next time... We will be discussing Rob Zombie's also highly divisive, polarizing film, House of Thousand Corpses.
I'm going to talk so much shit. Oh, man. I might get drunk for that one. I haven't done a drunk episode in a long time. I mean, we're talking like Halloween 3 level, too.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to get fallen down for that one.
But until then, I'm Ashley.
I'm Travis.
Take care, guys.
Bye.